Chapter 2. Strickland, New Jersey, was the kind of small town most people drove through without realizing they'd done it. It took all of a minute to get from one end to the other, and it wasn't uncommon for people to realize they'd just passed a community where people lived when they saw it in their rearview mirror. Settled in 1836 by an enterprising riverboat operator named Benjamin Strickland, the town sat a stone's throw from the Delaware River, on the other side of which you could see Pennsylvania. There was no bridge in Strickland when people began settling there, making travel across state lines difficult. It was a passage made by boat in those days, and the enterprising Benjamin used a barge he owned to ferry people from one side of the river to the other. His reward for helping travelers continue on their journey and at least a few criminals escape the law was having the place named after him. Benjamin Street, also named after Strickland's founder, was exactly 2 blocks long. On one side, it had Bertie's Bar, where an elderly Bertie herself still wiped beer from the counter with a warning to the person who'd spilled it never to do it again. There was Luther's General Store, a hub of activity and connection for the townspeople, and a gas station where one bored teen or another filled the tanks of locals and lost travelers. On the other side of the street was a liquor store for those who did their drinking at home, a florist whose survival depended on deaths and weddings, and the River Run Diner with seating for 12. A small satellite office of Powers and Gatlin Real Estate and a farmer's market completed all the business you'd find in Strickland, and for everyone who lived there, it was enough. Strickland wasn't the kind of place Laurel and Jeremy ever imagined themselves settling in, especially after years in New York City. But if escaping the urban life was what they'd wanted, and it had been, this was as far away from it as they could get while still having running water and an indoor toilet. The first house they'd bought, a small rural dwelling Laurel affectionately called the House in the Woods, had served its purpose for the first year they'd lived in the area. Several miles from Strickland, the house had been cozy but not appropriate for a growing family, even if they'd only grown by one. Once Laurel had the money from her books and the sale of the rights to them, and Jeremy had focused on his corporate career, they'd had their dream home built, then sold their house to another young couple. The decision had become final when Laurel discovered she was pregnant. Having a child had been both a source of anticipation and a source of conflict for them over the course of their relationship and marriage. Early on, neither considered themselves ready to raise a child, and Laurel sometimes questioned if she really wanted to. Pressure from their parents, especially from their mothers, had been applied and ignored many times. It was just something most mothers seemed to be anxious about, as if producing a grandchild was irrefutable proof that the marriage would succeed. Or it was an extension of the human need to believe life would go on forever, if only through descendants. They had resisted the pressure well enough that when Laurel became pregnant after moving to New Jersey, they were surprised and ready for a child to enter their lives. That had been almost a year to the day from when they'd first seen the house in the woods. Laurel had been feeling sick in the mornings and had missed her period long enough to suspect what was going on. A quick pregnancy test, with both of them sitting on the edge of the bed while they waited for the result to show, confirmed it. After their years together, not being certain they wanted to be parents, they were elated and nervous and terrified. "I don't know anything about being a father," Jeremy had said that night, lying in bed staring at the ceiling. "And I don't have one to ask what it's like. Not that I would turn to Paul if he was alive." Jeremy's joy, extreme enough to be accompanied by tears, had turned into anxiety in the hours since. "I'm sorry," Laurel had replied. "I know it wasn't easy growing up with him." Jeremy had never had the best relationship with his father, who had disapproved of his desire for an acting career and who had refused to be impressed with anything Jeremy did. Paul Calloway had found rare occasions to praise his son. Jeremy wasn't convinced the old man would have offered much in the way of congratulations if he'd been told he was going to be a grandfather. Most likely, Jeremy thought, he would have considered it overdue and made some remark about Jeremy's brother already having 3 children. "Your mother will be thrilled," Laurel said, hoping to lighten his mood. "You'll have to hold the phone away from your ear just so her shrieks don't make you deaf." Melanie Calloway had been nudging them to have a child since they first got engaged. She'd been even more persistent about it than Laurel's mother. "We should call them tomorrow," Laurel had said. She'd been remiss in speaking to her mother, something she used to do every few days, and she looked forward to the gushing her mother would do over the news. "Do you hear that?" Laurel had said suddenly. She'd been putting lotion on her hands when she heard something outside, past the window screen, out into the darkness. Their house was not nearly as isolated as the first one they'd lived in, tucked away as it was along a country road. But it was still not city living. It wasn't even town living. Jeremy listened for a moment. "I don't hear anything." "I swear I heard a dog barking," Laurel had said. "There are no dogs in Strickland." "I don't hear anything," Jeremy had replied. "Why are there no dogs in Strickland?" Laurel had sat on the bed listening, hoping to hear it again. "A dog can smell the devil, that's why." She jerked suddenly, as if a stranger had touched her arm. The words were like whispers in her ear, or memories of something that had once been said to her. "I want to get another dog," she'd said, as if they had not just been talking about having a child and telling their families. Jeremy had turned and stared at her. "Another dog? What are you talking about, Laurel? We've never had a dog." She'd felt foolish over a simple slip of the tongue. He was right. She was imagining things, even things she thought she heard out in the night. "I'm tired. I'm not being coherent," she had said. "I meant I'd like to get a dog." "Let's have a child first," Jeremy had said. "I think that's enough for one household right now." "Speaking of households," Laurel had said, "this one is just not big enough. I think we can agree on that." "We can," Jeremy had replied. "We knew this house would never be suitable for more than the two of us. I can call Scott whenever you're ready." Scott Dunlop was the young realtor in town who had been with them when they'd first seen the house. It had been an accident as they drove around lost while looking for a different property they'd been scheduled to see. "I think we'll go another route," Laurel had said. She had never really liked Scott. Something about him made her uneasy, not in a sexual way. There was just something creepy about him. "Another realtor? Maybe we'll get a lot and build a house of our own." "Seriously?" Jeremy had said, and Laurel could hear the excitement in his voice. It was a nice change from the mild dread he'd been expressing since the pregnancy test came back positive. "We have the money. Why not make this our dream house? Our dream house, not someone else's we just move into and try to make ours." Jeremy had been silent a moment. "Wow," he'd finally said. "Just wow. I like it." And that was how they had decided to build a house all their own, the house that royalties built, the house they would raise a family in, just Laurel, Jeremy, and the baby. "What are we going to name her?" Laurel had asked suddenly, having forgotten about the imagined barking of a dog in a town where there weren't any. "Why not him?" "I don't know," Laurel had replied. "I just have a feeling it's a her." To no one's surprise, she had been right.